Hello, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is Ryan.
And this is The Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is going to be the mini show for the month of May 2021. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about whatever we damn well please. Probably focus, we'll front load the show with games and then move on to some other topics if we feel like it, depending on how we're doing on time. So that way, if someone doesn't want to hear about non-gaming stuff, they can just go ahead and tune out once we're done. But I got a bunch of games. Nothing that I'm going to get too in-depth on, but I got a few things to clear the deck. You guys got any games that you want to discuss?
I really do not, actually. Okay. I mean, I've been playing stuff, and I've been consuming media in different ways, but it's stuff that's built for other shows that we have.
Yeah, I've just been playing Skyrim, and I haven't really played any more of Snap.
You quitter.
I'm going to get back to Snap. Oh, hell yeah, I'm going to get back to Snap. So Skyrim's been sucking up my life right now.
Well, why don't we, let me knock out a couple, and then we'll see if there's anything you want to say about Skyrim before
not
I do
really.
It. So I'm not, like, monologuing.
I've discussed it in the past.
But, let me kick things off here with, so some games that I've talked about before, but I just want to finish up the discussion, kind of close the book, because I finished them. I finished Turnip Boy Commits Tax Evasion.
Very good.
I was actually pretty near the end last time we talked about it, so overall thoughts on the game haven't,
Yeah, Sneakles announced it. It's the Turnip Boy is. I ruined the joke because I missed the punchline.
I can fix it in post. It's okay.
Turnip Boy is accused of rape.
Ew. Oh, that's going nowhere in post. My goodness.
I'm just kidding.
I figured the joke would be something about, towards the end of it, he discovered he was a turnip man.
Yeah. He becomes a turnip man by the end.
Yeah.
Hey, he fucks a carrot.
Oh, no, that's how you do it, yeah. You know, coming of age tale.
Which is where he was accused for the rape.
Tale
accused, but it was fake. It was, the carrot was.
The Turnip Boy gets me, dude.
Wait, no, isn't that the thought? Isn't that what? That's why they call that book Little Women. Because like, there's like this punchline ending where it's like they discovered they were little women. They were no longer little girls. They were little women.
Okay.
You know?
And then that's
they were,
the punchline of Turnip Boy. He realized he's a turnip man.
Yeah. He, like them, was in a wealthy family and was white and therefore could be married off to other wealthy people.
Like, as wealthy white people do, commit tax evasion.
And then, yes, commit tax evasion. Not avoidance, which is legal. Evasion, which is illegal.
Right.
What's the difference?
Avoidance is when, well, you're the accountant.
Well, yeah. I'm not a tax accountant, but yeah, you probably know as well as
what
I do.
What have you done with your life?
Avoided having to do people's taxes? Do you know how many times I tell people I'm an accountant, and the first question is, oh, can you do my taxes? And then two, it's can you give me financial advice? And it's like, no, I mean, I can't do it. Technically, it's against my company policy for me to do the second, which would also be illegal. And two, I don't know shit about taxes.
Mm.
Is it legal for you to give financial advice?
Yeah, yeah. If I were to go around giving you guys, like, information about the funds I work on, it's very illegal.
Mm.
I couldn't let you know what, like, their holdings are, like, what securities they have, what their portfolio is.
What about things outside of the things that you're working with? Do you have a general knowledge?
I could tell you the names of the mutual funds and their tickers if you wanted to go buy them. I guess you could. But even then, I'm not really supposed to market the mutual funds I work for.
And what would be in it for him?
Yeah, like, I don't know.
What about the ones
shit
that you don't work for? Like, you just know, like, this would be a smart investment.
I could do that, sure. I could certainly tell you to go buy Apple stock.
Thanks, Ryan.
Apple like, stock in this economy.
And GameStop.
But that's... So, tax avoidance is using, the tax code is so convoluted. It's such a mess. Congress constantly decides it wants to pass bills that change tax laws, you know, on top of the fact that we just have a confusing, convoluted tax system. So, tax avoidance is when you have someone that thoroughly digs through every possible way they can to pay as little tax within the rules. Tax evasion is when you're lying about it, or when
you're hiding something, or you're deliberately misrepresenting the value of things.
Yeah, okay, so tax avoidance is being smart, and tax evasion is being a dick.
Yes, tax evasion is legal. And then it could also be like taking a loss on something that you're not taking a loss on, or doing this thing called amortization. So say, for example, you're in agriculture and you're buying a tractor. Right, you get to amortize the cost of that tractor against your taxes, and you do so over X number of years. So you could, in theory, amortize more than you're supposed to, or you could say that the tractor cost twice as much as you paid for it. Then you would therefore be amortizing it twice as much as you should, so reducing your tax burden. Like, there's sneaky ways like that you can get around it.
So where's this in Turnip Boy?
None of this is in Turnip Boy. As I mentioned, I'm
immediately uninterested.
I'm sure tractors are terrifying.
They're the villains. So as I mentioned when I first talked about the game, the catchy title is there to do exactly that, to kind of draw you in, like, oh, this sounds really, like, this is a funny title. I want to see this Turnip Boy evade taxes, when really it's just the inciting incident for the game. You get like a notice from whatever revenue service these vegetables have, like, hey, you owe this much taxes. You rip up the paper and somebody rushes in and is like, wait a second, you just committed tax evasion. So now you owe all this money, I'll give you a job, and like sends you on all these Zelda-type tasks. Or task in the Zelda-like structure where, you know, go get me this MacGuffin. You go through a dungeon to do it. You bring it back to him. It's like, okay, now go get, you have this new skill. Go over here and get this item from this dungeon. So on and so forth. There's, I think, 4 of them throughout the game. So it's a pretty bite-sized little Zelda-style game. It's not mechanically complex either. I think they did a good job of realizing, like, hey, we have these ideas for mechanics. Let's not have them overstay their welcome. I never felt like the game was dragging on at any particular point. They probably could have cluttered it a little bit more, like padded it, if they came up with a couple more ideas for mechanics, like, and now he's got a boomerang or some shit like that. But
an ice rod, or a cape
that makes you invisible.
Hook shot.
But what they did is they came up with a couple of ideas, and they come up with some really good ways of using those things. Like, one of the basic things you can do is you water a plant that turns into a bomb, then you kick it. And then you have, there's like portals. You can like make portals in order to manipulate them into different spaces and destroy the obstacles in your way. They did a really good job of coming up with some ideas for how to make that fun and interesting, and they didn't repeat those things over and over again. So by the end, I'm not sure how long it took me, maybe 4 or 5 hours to get through, but it was a really fun 4 or 5 hours. And when I was done with the main quest, they give you a tracker to show your completion percentage. I was like, I'm going to keep going and 100% this game. Ended up doing it and had a good time with it. So I recommend it. Turnip Boy commits tax evasion, I think, is a worthwhile little light, short Zelda game.
Good deal.
If I were to levy any sort of complaint, I think the combat is pretty weak. You just have like a basic little sword, you swing it in front of you. It's not an integral part of the game. A lot of times you can just avoid combat altogether. So, no big deal. And another one that I finished up recently, I finished up Saga Frontier Remastered, which was that RPG that I talked about on the official show a little while back. I was not having a good time with it. I shouldn't say a lot of, because I haven't played that many. Of all the Saga games that I've played, you eventually reach a point where things kind of turn and you start rolling downhill. So just a basic recap of the game. It is an RPG, turn-taking battles, you build a party. There are essentially character classes like martial artists and warriors, such as swords, gunners. You also have like mage classes and mechs and monsters, and they're all going to sort of behave differently in battle in terms of the skills that they're using, and also the way that you are equipping them and the way that their stats are growing. Mechs are robots. They don't ever have stat growths. Your stat increases come from just the equipment that you're putting on them. Your basic fighter classes, gunners, martial artists, and warriors are going to gain stat buffs and learn new skills just from acting in battle. So, you know, you use your skills in battle, it gives you a chance of learning new ones. And the more battles they participate in, the more their stats are going to grow. Whereas mage classes are only going to gain stats in certain aspects. They're only ever going to grow their magical stats. They're not going to grow stats like their attack or their speed, that kind of thing. And because of that element of randomness to it, the early parts of the game are very slow going. You have to grind it out a lot. But once you get to that point where you start to become strong enough to get through battles quicker without having to expend too much of your mana to use your skills, you start rolling downhill, and the game picks up the pace a lot more. It was also very helpful that I found a guide, and it's hard to have guides for this sort of game because it's not structured like a traditional RPG where it's like, okay, now you're going to go to this town and complete a quest here, and you're going to go to this town over here, and there's going to be a dungeon and a quest over there as well. Rather, it just kind of like gives you this menu. Here's all the different places you can go. there's something that you should do. Go find out what it is. And it's similar to what we experienced in Hollow Knight, where we just kind of wandered around as like, I think I'm doing the right thing. I think I'm accomplishing something here. I found a double jump. That's pretty useful. What should I do with it? Am I making progress at all? It's hard to tell. But eventually, Hollow Knight, you get to a point where it kind of uncovers, okay, there are these three things throughout the world. Go find them or kill them. And then you know you're making progress. Whereas in the scenario that I played of the selectable playable characters, there were four bosses throughout the world that I had to go find and kill. And once I found out where they were, I actually started feeling like I was making progress again. And having that sort of sense of progress really helps to kind of compel you forward throughout the critical path so that you're not just feeling you're bumping your head against the wall. I think overall, I kind of liked it. There are seven playable characters, and they each have their own sort of journey that you're going on. They're all going to be going to, like, they all have the same, like, options of places that they go in. So you're like, your sandbox world is going to be persistent no matter which character you play as. But they're going to have different objectives, different bosses that they need to kill, different things that they need to find. And there are several things throughout the game that are not part of the critical path that you can get. Specifically, the way that you're learning new magical skills. You basically have to do all these side quests that are not part of the critical path or are entirely avoidable. And I pretty much finished this one character's playthrough of the game without using much magic at all. I was just going with basically five warrior class, a couple like a gunner, a couple of martial artists, and a couple of swordsmen, and I was able to combo my way through the fights. A lot of times you're at the mercy of a combo system because your basic attacks, by the end, I was doing maybe a couple hundred damage with the basic attack. Some of my more powerful skills were maybe doing a couple thousand damage. And then if I was pulling off a really good combo, I was doing upwards of 8, 9, sometimes 10,000 points worth of damage. Oof. And bosses are damage sponges. It take a long, long time if you're able to endure in a fight long enough to just take out a boss with standard attacks or without using combos. But the combo is also a dice roll. You can use combos are based on the type of skills that you're using from your characters in the fight. And if you use five skills from your five party members and it pulls off a combo one time, the next time it comes, if you do the exact same thing again, it's not necessarily going to do that again. So there's still this kind of beholden state to a random number generator that, thankfully, this game lets you save pretty much anywhere you want. Because otherwise, it would be very frustrating to lose in a boss fight and then get kicked out and say, now you have to go through this whole thing again so you can get to this boss again. And then maybe do the combo that you want to do.
Yeah.
But
that sounds kind of frustrating. Is it any more recommend or no?
This is, if you are like a super hardcore RPG lover, because otherwise this game is, it's a very counterculture RPG where the things that are intuitive and friendly about an RPG, the game is very deliberately like, no, we're not going to do that. So it's not like the game was built badly. It's not like the game is poorly designed. It's the game is designed specifically to take these conventions in RPG that make them a smooth ride and deliberately say, no, we're not going to let you do that. You're going to have to put in a lot of work in order to get through this. Overall, I enjoyed my time with it, but I'm not...
But this is also like a remaster of like a 23-year-old game.
Right, right.
So, I mean, you probably got to be like, well, just games... 2 decades old, you know, it probably doesn't have a lot of the kind of modern touches and finesse and, you know, decades of game design that
there's not a whole lot of RPGs around that time, even. I mean, it's still
Final Fantasy,
yeah, but other than that, I mean,
Breath of Fire,
Final Fantasy's not very good, Wild Arms, trash,
keep going, Dragon Quest,
oh, waste of time. It's so
early in the time frame for.
It's a very early time for RPGs. They do make some quality of life improvements, specifically like the ability to just speed things up. You can put the battle at like double speed. You can put like just the regular game speed at double speed, so you can move around quicker. The original did not have the ability to flee a fight, which, like, that just seems real basic. Just let me run away from the fight if I don't want to do a fight at the time.
The game's establishing that you're not a pussy. Right?
There are... I can't remember if the original allowed you to save anywhere. I don't remember. I think it did. Mm. But anyway. I am not eager to play through the other 7 scenarios that there are. Maybe one day I would, because there is a new game plus. You do get to carry over like all of the skills that you learned, and party members will like repeat. They'll show up in one character scenario and then another. It's like there are protagonists of other playthroughs that showed up and were part of my main party by the end of this game. So if I started up, you know, that Gunner Girls scenario, I could start up her with all like her stat builds and equipment and skills that she learned in my first playthrough, so it'll be a lot quicker to move through. But I don't know. I'm not sure that I'll ever go back to it. Maybe one day, but there's so many other things right now and so many other just RPGs that...
So you're telling the listener to spend their money on Atli or Risa?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. I'm just for the thighs.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
There's this part of not Atelier Ryza, but of Saga Frontier, where you have to there's some sort of side quest, and I never finished it.
Was there a hot spring scene or something?
No, it's probably in there somewhere, but I didn't find it. There's a swamp, and there's something in this swamp. I never got to the end of it, so I'm not sure what was back there. But in order to gain permission to get into the swamp, you have to go around this town and sample all of these, like, basically different breweries. Like, you go around, you're tasting all this alcohol. Like, okay, we'll go over here and try this person, and then he'll get you into the swamp. And by the time you're able to access it, your characters are drunk. And it actually, like, reflects in the battle while you're in that... So you'll start off the battle, it'll tell you you're drunk, and your characters will just be afflicted with different status conditions, whether it's, like, poisoned or confused... or like dizzy or something, and then you have to fight these enemies that are, you know, like pretty powerful, and just have these totally even more unreliable fights than the game normally is. So after attempting that a couple of times, I was like, never mind, I don't care what's at the end of this, I don't need it. And then I just went and beat the game. Nice. So there's funny little things like that, I'm sure someone could really dissect the game and figure out what's back there. Maybe it's something super helpful, but it is interesting. There's a lot that you could do that you don't have to do in order to
crush the hot springs. Is.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah,
that's where the hot springs scene is.
You've got those full news of all my robot characters.
When you're going to be drunk already, so you're going to have the proverbial beer goggles on.
Mm. You know. How are the robot characters drunk?
He said in a way that sounds a lot like Owen Wilson.
Man, you know, how long are you going to be doing this on every show?
I mean, it's like new Ring of Fire.
Every show, yeah.
I don't think it's going to stop.
It's been a bit since we've had a Ring of Fire reference.
But you know, Wes, now that you
mentioned wait, Ring of Fire, where everyone's cast as Owen Wilson.
Wow!
Look at that dragon! Wow!
And even the dragon is Owen Wilson.
What is that, a crossbow? Wow!
He's jumping at me with an axe. Wow.
So, Wes, you mentioned how are your mechs drunk. I didn't try to put either... I had 2 mech characters. I didn't try to put either one of them in my party.
I think you should put them both in your party.
Maybe I should have, because how does a robot get drunk? Maybe that would have been a nice way to be able to
circumvent make some progress. That kind of shit.
Yeah.
In Futurama, Bender is like a notorious alcoholic.
Right,
but he doesn't get drunk until he doesn't drink.
Right, he sort of like gets the negative effects of drunkenness from having a lack of alcohol.
Yeah, precisely.
Wes, tell me about Skyrim.
There's just not really. I've just failed Skyrim so many times.
But what's the character build you're going with this time?
Oh my god, I am
just
going
break
for
my monologue.
I am going for a minor stealth archery build. Minor because stealth archery is broken, where you could just one shot people from a distance. But I'm using a lot of the crossbow, and I'm going heavy enchanting with the intention of getting 100% magicka reduction on particular schools of magic, so I get free spells, which is fun. All you gotta do is get up to level 80 in enchanting, and then putting a 25% reduction on 4 pieces of armor. And then you get free magic spells, and you don't have to invest anything in magicka. which is more health and more stamina that you can pour in.
Free health, nice. free magic is kind of like free healthcare. Why the hell don't we have it already?
Why don't we? Mm-hmm. You're gonna twist it.
But don't you want to pay these absurd deductibles?
Real quick though, did you read through that chat line in your family?
No. No,
WhatsApp.
Dez was telling me that Jeremy said something about electric cars, and I told her, "Hey, tell him I sold Socialist Revolution." And then apparently things went.
Sidebar. Why am I not in your family thread?
I'm not in my family thread.
Why aren't you in your family thread?
Why is he? And he's not a blood relative of yours.
I had
no, but they do love me more.
I had it's true. I had WhatsApp, and then I was never reading the things that they were saying, so I deleted it.
So where did this start? Yeah, your mother said something along the lines of
we're really not going to do this on the podcast.
We're not.
No.
All right. I thought it was really funny.
This is like that Discord.
I was cracking
that
up.
You claim to have. Where I don't even get to go to it.
I really should send you the invite.
You really should.
Wes is in the group.
Yeah, why don't one of you assholes send me the invite to this Discord?
Okay.
You know,
I don't even have your friend on Discord.
Yeah, you're my friend. But then weren't we using a chat feature on there or something?
It's hard to say if you're using anything on Discord because it's kind of broken sometimes.
Yeah, like we had one like in 2018 that I was a part of. We were all chatting through.
Yeah, the Miiverse, right?
Yeah.
I think I still have that Discord on my Discord.
The Miiverse is still the one we're using.
Then you should go there and find me.
Where's the other one, then?
We'll figure it out when we're off air.
Oh, fucking no.
So, Ryan, no games this time around?
No games. I've been thinking, not playing a game, but I've been thinking about what character I'm going to start with when Diablo 2 comes out.
Yeah, what are you thinking?
But I was thinking about creating a list of, like, you've got seven different classes to go with, like, where do you start? Where does one begin?
Okay, so where are the seven classes?
Immediately, seventh, the one you should not start out with, especially if you're new to the game, do not pick Barbarian. Barbarian is...
Really?
It's the slowest class. It's really best played in a team setting. If you're going to be playing with a bunch of other people, like always, sure, go Barbarian. Barbarian is heavily gear dependent, so odds of you finding early life leech items is pretty low. And it's so, yeah, again, you really need to spec the character out. You're better having other characters that farm gear for it. And it's also a melee character. Melee characters are inherently tougher than the magic users.
Okay, so now we're starting at number seven. What's number six not to do?
Number six, just because of the skill curve involved, I actually would probably say the druid.
Oh.
The druid is so bipolar because there's two things you're going to do. You're going to go with this elemental all magic route, or you're going to be going with the transformations into werebear or... the werewolf form, which I love the werewolf form. It's so much fun. But the thing is,
werewolves in Skyrim.
Yeah. But the werewolf is in the same boat as the barbarian. It's a physical build. It's really gear dependent. If you don't get the right gear, it's a slog to get through. So what you're probably going to do is beat normal, get to like level 30, be playing as the magic user, and then respec the character into the werebear or werewolf. It's just a convoluted character. I wouldn't say use that. Number five on the list, I'm tempted. This is where it gets fun. These are all these other builds are actually going to be kind of fun to play as. I would probably say the assassin. The assassin is probably the easy mode. Easiest character you can play. You can pretty much get through the game using four buttons.
That's what I'm doing.
But
you're not playing this game. Don't lie, John.
There is some strategy to it where it's about how you're placing your traps. This is a trap assassin. The other spectrum, you can build an assassin that does these... dagger attacks. I forget the term for them. They're like the punching daggers. But no one ever does it. Don't bother doing it. If you wanted to do a melee character, literally play the other two ones I just said. But wait, don't play either of them. then I would say the Amazon. Amazon's just really, really fun to play. Again, very gear dependent to an extent, but like it's a dexterity based class, so it's ranged. You have a lot of fun with javelins, spears, or bow and arrow. I would recommend javelins. Bow and arrow is good, but it takes a lot of work, and you really got to get used to maneuvering through the game.
What is the difference between a javelin and a spear? I've always
you throw javelins.
Yeah,
well, you throw spears too.
It's sort of a half and half.
Not if you're doing it wrong.
No, you don't throw these spears. These spears are like super like long. They're like 8 feet long. So they're sort of like meant to keep away. Javelins will do both. Javelins can stab kind of like a spear will, but you also get the throwing mechanic.
Oh,
so right. The spears do a lot more damage. You know, than the javelins do. That's a sidebar. If you're going javelin, if a piece called a Titan's Revenge ever drops in your game, whatever build you're doing right then, stop and make an Amazon and make a Jabazon. You're gonna love the shit out of it with the Titans. After that, well, that's what four I've said so far. There's three more to go. I would say this is when our first pure melee character is the Paladin. I just love the shit out of the Paladin. I find that he is really, you feel him hit things. When he hits something, it fucking dies. It's great to play as it. He has all of these auras, like his first levels of skills are all super useful. They flow so well through the game. His skill tree is super simple. You'll find yourself with lots of excess skill points and don't necessarily mean use them. It just means like, you're doing good. You're doing good with this guy. He very much just gets in everyone's grill. He's hard to take down. Hits like a fucking truck. Fucking great. Love him. Then number two, one and two. This is kind of a toss-up. Ultimately, no matter what you're doing in the game, you're going to want to build a sorceress at some point. But that said, I might want to put it at two. Sorceress is also, it's one of those ones where it's easy to pick up, but it's probably the hardest class to master. Mm. And it's also one that requires you to do a lot of technical stuff. It's a very technical.
I felt that way with Diablo 3 with a wizard.
Yeah.
Like, I just couldn't really get the hang of it. Like, I didn't really understand where the damage was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And I was struggling. That's why I always ended up going back to the Demon Hunter.
Yeah.
Is that what that class is? Is it Demon Hunter? What is it?
Yeah, Demon Hunter would be sort of like the Assassin.
Yeah, okay. So it was a Demon Hunter. I was wondering if I got the name right.
Yeah. So I love the Sorceress. I would say if you're starting out, go Fireball. There is a two-piece stealth armor called... it's called Stealth. It's a two-piece chest armor called Stealth. And you get it with the Tau and the Eth, which is the 7th and 5th runes. Get that on... You're going to put that on every character, no matter what you're doing, but... you can equip that by level 17. That will make your life easier. She can also equip a staff using Tier Ral, which is a leaf. And that gives you +3 to all fire skills. If you're doing a druid, you'll also want to use that because the druid's got a lot of fire spells too. But
Tier Ral, John.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
I thought that was plainly obvious.
Oh, okay.
Because, there's this whole rune system that you got to use where it's... but it's better to go to the numbers. So you could do like Eld, Tier, Neph, Eth, Ith, Tal, Ral, Ort, Thal, Sol, Shale, Dol, Hell. Let's say you.
Oh my knee, pa me, goes
on, bro. But it's easy to go 3-8 or 7-5 to say like Tal, Eth, or Tier, Ral.
How do you have this shit in your head?
I've played this game for thousands of hours.
Yeah, but still.
Like, for the last 20 years.
I love this game.
Remembering all the runes off your head.
Do you
have them tattooed somewhere on your body? I feel like you should.
I probably couldn't go past 24.
How many are there?
I think like 30.
Oh, you're getting there.
There's some up at the end. Like
another 1,000 hours.
Gull and Vex and... Oh my, those ones are hard to keep track of. At any rate, I digress. Yeah, so number two, you're going to want to build Sorceress. Sorceress is the least gear-dependent character. You could play through the game naked with her and be better than a Barbarian.
And you would want to.
Yeah. Just fucking fantastic. Yeah, she does the three elementals, so it's fire, lightning, not electric, and
Thousand of Iron
Cold. I was about to call it ice and cold. Yeah, so...
Where's the dragon type? Are there bugs?
Is there a dragon type? You can equip certain set pieces.
It's going to be a dragon steel type.
Yeah.
Mm. I almost said dragon, but you already said that in my brain.
Yeah. You'll want to use it for magic find. There's a lot of gear that you can equip that increases magic find, which is just helpful for harvesting gear for other characters. She also has access. By the way, no cooldowns. This game does not have fucking cooldowns. Thank God. Whoever invented cooldowns should be shot. It is the dumbest thing in video games. I hate cooldowns. So thankfully...
Does it use an MP system?
Yeah, there is a magic system. A mana system.
Mm-hmm.
And you have potions that can restore them. There's a couple of archaic things in the game that people nowadays would probably say that's not intuitive game design, such as using potions to restore those properties rather than just having the skills themselves determine how much of you can do with both of those things. I digress. So get your sorceress going for magic. And the number one, the build that everyone needs to play with, it was the very first build I did back in, June of the year 2000.
Oh, we're coming up.
Wait, can I guess? This is the one that had Necromancer, right?
Necromancer.
It's the Necromancer.
Necromancer is so much fun. Again, Necromancer is a build that requires like zero gear. You can play it naked as well. It's so much fun to just summon a horde of monsters. It's a slow build. You know, that sorceress will fly through maps. Again, she has a teleport, so she can teleport as wide as the screen is with no cooldown. So you could just flip across the screen. And there's this thing called faster cast rate. Faster cast rate works by frame counts. So, like, if a sorceress takes, like, 8 frames to cast a spell, there are certain breakpoints that reduce it from 8 to 7 to 6 to 5. So, basically, that determines how quickly in the game operates, I think, at 25 frames a second. So, you can just literally flip through the screens so fucking fast. Faster than you could teleport next to a bad guy that could hurt you and then flip out of there before that thing has enough frames to wind up and attack you. The sorceress is so strong. But no, I'm talking about the Necro. Play the Necro. Because you could summon a big thing of monsters, or there's a poison build or a bone build. You can go that does like these bone damage shit. I'd recommend go summoning. I think everyone just wants to do that. Everyone wants to make a big fucking army of the undead and have them fight.
The Necromancer in 3, wasn't he just summoned one big ass golem or something?
Yeah.
I never played it.
It's not really.
I stopped playing before the Necromancer came out, so I don't really know what he does.
Yeah, Diablo 3 is so much more of like a streamlined, polished approach to an action RPG, and Diablo 2 is just sort of this mess of stuff that's all there for you to explore. It's not like Path of Exile. Path of Exile is so confusing and so convoluted.
Yeah, I can't. Every time I try Path of Exile, I get like 20 minutes in and I go, dear God, why am I doing this?
Yeah, yeah. It's not like that, but there is just so much sort of hidden lore within the way that the game operates that, you know, again, that keep people like me coming back for another 1,000 hours. So yeah, like, fucking do the Necro. You okay over there?
Sorry. Yep.
Don't die.
Yeah, but like, so you'll summon, like, there's a whole summoning tree you're going to do, and your typical summon build is going to involve skeletons. You can get skeleton mages, which I don't really recommend, but you can do that if you feel so inclined. You're going to put 1 point into it no matter what, so, you know, whatever. You get a series of golems you can select, and then you have revives. And revives turn monsters you've slain alive to your side for 2 minutes. Oh my god, at level 24, you can roll for items at Act 3 shops for a staff with teleport charges. They usually cost about 80 grand, which is probably far more money than you'll have, but if you pick up the right items, you'll make the money quick enough to do it. If you don't die and you pick up enough items to get the money real quick. A staff with teleport charges is a game changer. Like, you could have an army of like 7 skellies, 3 mages, your golem, your mercenary, get an Act 2 merc, defense in Act, or in the normal one, and then a frost in Act, or in Nightmare. And then you'll have, on top of that, a whole bunch of revives, and you're teleporting with your entire army using this Necromancer. Just dropping in on bosses. Like, everybody right on top of the boss, where they're all, like, stacked. There's not even, like, they're going to have to make spaces for them. Like, it's a grid pattern thing. You are just going to be one spot on the map pissing death onto a boss with an army of like 20 things. It is so rewarding.
And that's why charges. How many charges does it have?
It depends on which one you get. I think usually around 30. So you need to be kind of deliberate with how you use it. And it's also very expensive to repair it to get the charges back.
Mm.
But yeah, like every build, usually it's the offhand weapon that I have on every build that's not a sorceress and already has that. Unless they've got an easy way to travel around. Oh, by the way, your paladin. Paladin flies around like a motherfucker, too. Just because his default attack, he has an attack called Charge, which has him run at things. But it doesn't necessarily need a bad guy as a target to operate. So you could just be, like, zipping around the map like a retard. It's great. You can use Frenzy on your barbarian, which you shouldn't because he's number 7 on the list. But you can get a couple of swings in, and then he drives around like a sports car. He's really, really fun. Oh, man. This was literally what I've been thinking about. Like, what build will I start with? What was my first?
When is it coming out? Do we know?
I don't know.
Yeah, when is this game out?
This year. So they said this year. Sometime.
Sometime this year, yeah.
Yeah, so. Gosh, I'm ready. I'm going Paladin first, though.
If I feel inclined to play it, I will probably do the Necromancer. Just because that does sound like a lot of fun.
Necro is a lot of fun. Oh, and Corpse Explosion. The 3 best skills in the game are Corpse Explosion, Teleport, and Static Field.
I'm on board. I think the Witch Doctor did that.
Yeah.
He had things that he could summon that just exploded.
So like, there were frogs. Well, Corpse Explosion's the neat thing about it is that it does a percent of damage of the life of the monster that you're killing. So it's not like there's a scaling multiplier of damage. Like, it starts with 30 to 45, and then every level after that, it goes up by 10%. No, it just does a percentage of that thing's total life pool. Hmm. So if you cast an amp damage on something, which means that it's going to do double damage, and then there's already the corpse of whatever that thing is, and you blow it up, It's like, that's going to be more life than the thing was originally. So
is doing damage based on what's taking the damage or based on the health of what you're blowing up?
Oh, what you're blowing up. It's going to deal in a radius.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So that's totally useful. And that's also, by the way, that's what your trap assassin is exploiting. When you use your sentries, right, there's a thing called a death sentry, and you'll use that, and it triggers corpse explosion. It's sort of like a skill within a skill. Let's move on. Let's stop talking about Diablo. I'm really excited for it. It's going to be great.
Cool. I'll be an assassin.
Yes.
That's it. We got a party right here.
I like it.
I got a couple more games that I want to mention that I beat one of them, the other one I tapped out. Let's start with the one that I tapped out of is Bit Trip Runner. So I've talked about Runner 2, Runner 3. Runner 2 was on Wii U, Runner 3 was on Switch. I liked those games, I liked them both. Bit Trip Runner was a WiiWare game, if you remember WiiWare, kids.
That's now a thing.
And they brought it to Switch. It was recently, they brought all of the Bit Trip WiiWare games over to Switch under the eShop there. It was recently on sale. I bought it for $2.50, which I thought was a pretty sweet deal, because I liked the other two. I never played Bit Trip Runner on WiiWare, but now WiiWare is no longer a thing. The shop has been shut down. A lot of those games are lost to time, unless they've been brought over to Switch or other platforms. Like I mentioned, I liked Runner 2 and Runner 3, so I downloaded this one. And it's interesting because you have to think of Bit Trip Runner within the context of the platformers on. WiiWare had a 20 megabyte size limit. So tiny. You couldn't make large games. So a game like Runner, there are things you got to think about in terms of just the scope of it. A lot of the levels are short. Whereas in Runner 2, Runner 3, you have these longer levels that have all these checkpoints, and they can offer you all different types of challenges because they know, like, okay, we're going to be able to stop your progress right here and restart it here if you die. Just in terms of the assets that they're able to use in Bit Trip Runner, the WiiWare game, there's a lot of recycled assets. You're seeing a lot of like the same challenges repeated over and over. The art style is, of course, very simplistic, very minimalistic, as opposed to the sort of ostentatious, ornate styles of Runner 2 and Runner 3, where it's just a very bombastic and whimsical. But in Bit Trip Runner, you don't have the ability to do that because of the scope of the game, the limit that they're trying to work within. So a lot of the, especially early on, levels are short. You're looking at like maybe 20 or 30 seconds in order to get through. And there are three worlds. Each world has 12 stages. And by the time you get to the end of the stage, you're playing through a level that's maybe going to take you 2 or 3 minutes to get through. So kind of the scope of the level grows, and they're introducing a handful of new skills as you're progressing along. Jump and kick. There's no double jump, sadly.
No.
The sequels do have double jumps. This one does not. The ability to kick your way through certain obstacles. You can block certain projectiles that are coming at you. Slide underneath things. Bounce off a little trampoline things. Those are kind of your basic mechanics that kind of introduce you to...
Does the rainbow always follow you?
The rainbow does not follow you. So in any given level, there are collectibles. There are gold bars, which is kind of like a way of tracking your how close you are to the end. It'll tell you there's 18 gold bars on this stage. You can try to collect them all to get some bonus points if you want and go to a bonus stage, or you can just use those to gauge, okay, this is how close I am to the end. And to kind of judge, like, this is going to be a shorter level versus a longer level. And there's also radios, little stereos, boomboxes that you can collect. And what that's going to do is going to sort of ramp up the music of the game. And it's also going to give you like a fancier trail behind you. But if you collect all of the boomboxes in a particular stage, and once you get that last boombox to the end, you have that rainbow trailing behind you. It was kind of fun. The game is very much based on that music. You can tell, especially Runner 2, Runner 3, all of the actions that it's asking you to input are going to be very much in tune, if you're doing them correctly, along with the music. It's going to play along with the melody of the music, as if you're like almost playing a rhythm game or a music game rather than a
is there like a runner platformer genre for the kind of music that's playing, or is it
it's kind of It's hard to describe. I'd have to play a sample, but it's just kind of not I wouldn't go far as just like elevator music or like some sort of easy listening stuff, but
yeah,
like a very, very mellow. It's not like
it's not like high energy dance music or something like that.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
What was that? Wasn't there a metal game that you were playing a little while ago?
Oh God, yeah, I forget the name of it.
Or like a, but yeah, it came out like
last summer, and yeah, you're fighting off hordes of zombies with the power of metal.
Yeah.
And in generally, like it was kind of a cool game, but the music tracks, the metal tracks that it was offering, weren't very melodic. And when you're trying to like play a music game, it's you're very much like wanting to have a strong melody in order to give that a stronger, I guess a mechanic to grasp onto. Yeah. When you're doing your button inputs.
Oh, Blackberry, Blackberry.
Rayman. Yeah, Rayman was stop. Yes, Rayman was.
Any more of that, we have to pay for the song.
Really good music levels in those Rayman games. It was really, really good. But that's kind of the thing with the runner games, except is you're working with original music as opposed to licensed stuff. The problem that I had with Bit Trip Runner, which is the first runner game, as I've mentioned, is that there are times where the view that it is giving you is not optimal. It's either like tracking, like it ends up with your character way up high on the screen and it doesn't like track with you vertically. So it gets more difficult to see obstacles that are coming in your way when you're oriented that way. Also, there are times when if you're working up, there's one particular obstacle that comes up a few times where you're working up a flight of stairs, you're jumping, but then there's an obstacle in your way and then more obstacles flying at your way, so you have to jump over an obstacle and then quickly slide. In later runner games, you're able to like slam down really quick and go into a slide. In this game, you can't do that. So it is some very, very precise timing that is difficult to work out. And the other thing about this game is there's no checkpoints. So when you're going through a long level, one that's going to take 2.5 minutes to get through to the end, and you have a particularly challenging obstacle in the way, it's of course a one-hit death. You get sent all the way back to the beginning, and then you have to play through the first, you know, minute and a half of this stage again just to get to the point where you need to practice the thing that's coming up again.
That's rough.
Yeah. And I can understand not wanting to put checkpoints in a stage that's going to take you 30 seconds, but when you're getting into the longer stages, you really need to have something there. Otherwise, you know, after attempting a stage, like it felt like I was trying this one stage for like 2 hours. It was probably closer to 45 minutes.
Oh God.
But even like playing the same stage, like the same like minute and a half of a stage over and over again for 45 minutes, eventually like I'm not having fun. Goodbye, game. And I closed it and I'll never open it back up. And it was only 4 levels away from the end.
Oh, wow.
So it was really close, but...
So it sounds like no double jump.
No double jump.
No slam.
No slam.
No checkpoints.
No checkpoints.
Mm.
Yeah.
No hot women.
Well...
Are you going to get this double jump slam checkpoint DLC, though?
I'm not going to pay for it now. I'm not going to pay for mechanics that they obviously removed.
Yeah.
But... No, I mean there are other games that I am playing that I'm having a lot more fun with. So,
yeah, sorry. Honestly, that seems like it's a little too tough, and that's also kind of why I stopped playing that Super Meat Boy Forever.
Yeah,
it literally just got to the point where it was tediously difficult.
Hmm.
Where you know, I realized I could be spending the next 20 minutes trying to beat a 40-second passage of a game.
Hmm.
You know, where it's just like, okay, I think I'd rather just not do this.
I think it's a really difficult a balance to strike because, like, I don't mind a difficult platform. And to runner's credit, you don't have to deal with any load times. It zips you back to the beginning really quick, and you're able just to keep going.
Yeah.
So you don't have to tolerate any sort of, like, loading or tedious bits where it has to, like, reset you to where you were. It's very snappy. But it's a difficult balance to strike where you have, like, these challenging platforming sections mixed with it being rewarding enough to be willing to repeat the same challenges over and over again until you get it right. And that's something like, which makes a game like Celeste. I
was just about to say, Celeste did it right.
Yeah, such an impressive game. And part of that is because it is so generous with checkpoints. So they're like, okay, we know you just did the thing. It took you 20 tries. You're only able to do it once. But whatever, you did it. You get to move on to the next thing. And yeah, it's just much more.
They need to come out with a new Celeste.
Maybe one day.
Who made that?
I think it was a developer called Matt Makes Games.
Oh. Yeah. Well, somebody needs to get on the phone with Matt.
Yeah, and tell him to make some more games.
Yeah.
I'd buy another Celeste. That'd be great.
Yeah, ditto.
And there's one last game that I downloaded, and this one's called Kero Blaster. K-E-R-O Blaster. And it is a game made by, it's either development studio, it might just be one guy. The developer, whether it be like a company or just one dude, of Cave Story. He also made a game, also made a game called Ika-chan, which is a game that I played on 3DS. That's a really short game, but as far as I know, these are like the three games in this studio's repertoire. It is a side-scrolling, like, gunner platformer, so a lot of shooty-shoot going on.
Frog.
You are a little frog. And you shoot things that are in your way. You got all different types of guns. And this is another short one. This game is probably took me 2, maybe 3 hours to get through to the end. The really nice thing is that there's like an economy to it, and upgradable guns that make your guns really powerful and give you like all these different like spread guns and flamethrowers and different types of like projectiles and rolling projectiles and things like that. So it gives you a lot of variety to how you're going to tackle particular bosses or just enemy encampments or setups and stuff.
We always joke about it, but it seems like this game just gives you a gun.
Yeah.
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 Makes things easier for you, huh?
It sure does.
I mean, everything's easier with a steamroller, but...
And since you have a gun, you don't need courage.
Nope.
but yeah, it's I think like maybe 6 or 7 stages in total. And the nice thing about it is if you are playing a stage, and there's a life system, which is, you know, archaic because this is an older game. But when you run out of lives, you get kicked out and you can re-enter the beginning of the stage. But you get to keep the money that you were able to gather in that stage. So you can use that to, you know, upgrade your gun, upgrade your health. Buy an extra life if you want to. That seems like a waste, though. You can buy like basically a fairy in a bottle, like Zelda, that will restore your health once you reach zero. So you know, it makes it to where, you know, you get kicked back to the beginning, but it then also gives you an opportunity to spend some resources that you're able to gather to maybe make it easier the next time around. But yeah, I had a lot of fun with this one. It is a pixel art game, so it's got a simplistic art style to it. But I really liked the sort of bullet frenzy that it was presenting in some of the tougher boss fights. It was really cool. A lot of pattern recognition to overcome different boss challenges. And a lot of not only like picking the gun that will best fit your playstyle, but also picking a gun that will best suit a situation. So when you're playing through like the game, just like the standard enemies and standard level areas, one of the most useful weapons that I found was just basically your spread shot. Just cover as much of the screen as you can with your own bullets in order to dispatch as many enemies as possible at one time. But then when it came to the bosses, you know, you're targeting very specific areas. You could just kind of spray and pray with a spread projectile weapon, but you're probably much better off going with a weapon that's going to specifically target the weak points that you want to get to. But yeah, this game was cool. I had a lot of fun with it. Anybody else want to tag in? That's all the games that I have. So we can move over to other topics if you feel like it.
Yeah.
I finished...
Oh.
Book 4 of a Brandy Sandy book.
Oh, wonderful.
Earlier today.
The Stormlight Archives.
Yes, Book 4, The Rhythm of War. And man, it's been... obviously years since his last book came out. And so I always forget how big, when he drops things on you, it hits. Like, this guy is just downright brilliant when it comes to his books. I've never read an author who's developed a world and universe and everything as in depth as this guy. And these Stormlight Archive books are bringing together characters and things that you see in... What is that?
That is not what I figured he looked like.
Yeah, yeah, that's Brandy Sandy.
He has this great... This is so bad for radio, but yeah, he has this smug look that says, like, yeah, I wrote this book.
Yeah, yeah, pull the fucking... He seems like such a down-to-earth guy about it, too. He legitimately just cares about his fans. He does weekly YouTube videos of just updates. Like, this is the update that I'm having this book. Here's this merch that's coming out. There's a special edition of this book if you want to do it. Here's he does weekly fucking updates on YouTube.
Can we see his picture again?
John, do you know how many pages this book is, by the way?
Oh, that guy's a virgin. No, I don't.
1,200 pages.
My
this
goodness.
Book is longer than the Bible.
That's a tome. I am sad that I didn't actually physically read it. I have the book to do that, but then Jeremy and I were going to do that original side-scroller thing, so I couldn't find the time to actually read this book because I was already reading a lot.
At work.
So I picked it up on Audible.
Nice.
And I've been listening to it on Audible. It's 52 hours.
My goodness.
Most Audible books are around 13.
Yeah. That's a crazy long book.
Fucking 52 hours.
You think
for this
he
book.
Like considered like cutting it up into like two different books and charging people
book,
twice?
This is they do that overseas. I'm not even joking. Overseas, they sell the book in two different parts. Jeremy has book one and two, but he essentially has four books. Because they split up into smaller normal sized books.
Yeah.
And he has to buy them all separately.
Yes.
Whereas you get to pay one price.
And get this big ass heavy duty thing. Yeah. Of course, I'm buying it in hardcovers. It was like 20 something bucks.
Mm.
But it's fine. I want to take my money and come out with these books.
I mean that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
Like I bought a book, a comic book, and it was like $60.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, they said specifically that it was that 20 square miles were cut down of rainforest. Just to make rhythm.
Now this guy is—he's actually a teacher who teaches writing. I forget where. And he has some videos on YouTube of his classes and everything. I'm legit interested in watching them. They're just hour plus long videos. So I'm like
lectures.
Yeah, it is lectures about how to like do plots and character development and shit like that.
How to build the lore.
Like the guy is insane. How big he's built, because if you take a look at his other books, the only other book series he's really developed as much is going to be the Mistborn series, because he has three books of that, and then he has three more books of that that takes place 300 years later with a different character. And you get a pretty good glimpse of it, but they're like regular sized books. They're nothing insane. And then you got these other standalone books like Warbreaker and Elantris and some of the other ones that... characters and themes that pop up in these other books are showing up in the Stormlight Archives pretty subtly at first, but now they're starting to pick up some pace in these books, in the later books. Book 3 and book 4, you really start getting it blatantly. And that book that he's made for the Roshar system, the planet that this book is taking place on, because all of his books are separate planets all in the same Cosmere and everything. And that planet, he's developed so in-depth. There's so much going on with just that, with the different cultures of different peoples across the planet. It's absolutely insane. And then the type of things that he addresses and attacks philosophically and everything is nuts. He handles people with split personalities. He handles PTSD. He handles what's right and wrong when it comes to war. He handles... religion in a broad sense as well. He handles so many different big stuff, and these characters are drastically different from the beginning of the book to the end of it. Like, it's massive changes. He just really tackles a ton in these books, and he needs every single page to do this. And it's just brilliant the way he will develop a character and then just take him somewhere where you had no idea that he was playing on with this. I've read a lot of fantasy books. It's one of the things I do. I just read a lot of fantasy books. Some sci-fi, mostly fantasy. Nobody handles the type of things that he's addressing in these books like he does. It's absolutely insane. The guy is awesome. And I am super excited for book 5. And, oh my God, I am so pumped right now. You have no idea. That I was in the middle of...
Well, this came out in November of 2020 as well.
Yeah. So it took me a while to get around to it.
Well, like, he's not pumping out 100 pages a day.
No.
Is he? So I think it might be a minute.
Oh, no, they had the last one.
He got some time.
It might be a minute before he gives you the next 1,232
Here's the
pages.
Impressive thing about it. He's coming out with other books in between these books.
Right. What is it? Rhythm? The Wax and Wane series.
Yeah, that was an older series. That's the second trilogy in the Mistborn series.
So you got four installments of the Stormlight Archive, the three original Mistborn, and then three installments of this Wax and Wane, which is also somehow incorporated with Mistborn.
The Wax and Wane take place 300 years after Mistborn.
Oh, that's what you're talking about earlier.
Yeah. So that's what that is. It's 300 years later in that. And that's just a fun, like, buddy detective cop series. It's I really liked what he did with that. It's really cool.
That's what he does when he's just palling around.
That Joe Biden book?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad he's the president, so that book resonates more.
Well, I'm also glad that Joe Biden is president, but for other reasons.
Yeah, not just the fact that the book pays off.
That other guy, that Donald Trump guy, I don't think he's very trustworthy.
Yeah, it turns out.
I think,
bit of a piece of shit.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, but all these books are so even drastically different. Like, the first Mistborn book is essentially, like, almost like a... It was scoped like a heist book, where you put your crew together and plan out how to rob the bank, but it was a book about killing the Emperor. But it's just... Everything about these series are insane, and they're handled so differently, and all the characters are extremely well-developed, and... Dear God, if you like fantasy book, just read everything by Brandon Sanderson. Dear God. They're so good. All right, we can move on.
Can I recommend some bad fantasy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I have an Audible account, too, but I buy bad books, mostly. I got a great bad book that people can check out. There's been a second
installment. Is it Trucking Through Time?
Sadly, it's not Trucking Through Time. There might be a third installment that tells essentially the same story, though. But no, it's... the first book is called The Bridge Kingdom. It's by this writer, Danielle Jensen. And basically, she wrote it with the intent of writing smut. But what it turns into is more of this practical fantasy narrative.
Is there smut in it, though?
Yeah. Not at first, but man, there is.
Is it like... Yeah, is it good?
Oh, yeah. No. there's definitely some attention paid to the mechanics of the two main people just fucking. So, yeah, it gets there.
Girls or
no, guy and a girl. Here's the setup.
Are we gonna be reading? Is the loser gonna build the Pokemon quiz? Gonna be reading experts from this book?
No, I mean, I might change the name so it's like, you know, it's like Ash and Brock or something. Maybe no. But yeah, the whole premise is like, again, this is super schlocky fantasy writing that is totally set up to give you a lot of violence and then a lot of sex. It's
the way God intended it.
Oh, it's Game of Thrones.
Yeah, essentially. Except this one actually has some interesting characters.
Okay.
Basically, there's this... The Bridge Kingdom is this one group of people that have a king. And it's a very important port town, essentially. It's like... to compare it to something today, it's like Crimea. What Crimea means to Russia as a means of them having access to water. This is a very important piece of land. And there's going to be this arranged marriage between the king of this kingdom and the princess of this other kind of nefarious, like, kind of like evil kingdom, right? And so what the king of this other kingdom decides to do is he's going to simultaneously impregnate 20 women.
Oh, my goodness.
So that he will then produce, you know, 20 different girls. I forget how it works. However many it took for him to have, like, 20 girls. And then sort of entered them into this contest where they were going to figure out who's going to be the princess that would be married to this king, only to train her to be like a deadly assassin. And like to, of course, train her in all of the ways that one would be at the same time a proper princess, but then simultaneously a ruthless murderer. Right, and they're all told...
I mean, everybody has to have their hobbies.
Yeah, yeah. And then they're all told this other kingdom with the port is, like, evil and mean and doing all this bad stuff to them, and, like, they're the cause of all of our problems, basically. Right, so the one girl, through a hilarious series of events, ends up being the one that survives of the... shouldn't say survive. One of the ones that makes it through the process... And ends up being the one that gets married to the king, even though it's like the last one they wanted to actually come through with this thing. Oh, and then, of course, she finds out through a series of bloody murders and killing and all of this bathing in blood that they do that he's kind of hot and that they need to fuck. So then, sure enough, she's eventually won over by this, only to still have the plot of this thing blow up in her face. And now they made a sequel. Danielle Jensen's made a sequel called The Traitor Queen. So obviously our girl didn't die, and maybe this other guy's going to be all right. We'll find out.
You said that thing about impregnating 20 women and everything. That made me think, I don't know why, but if you guys remember that really old show called Reaper?
No.
Sounds familiar. I don't think I watched it.
It was a guy who lost his soul to the devil and had to go around and collect souls that escaped from hell with weird things. Like they'll give him like a hair dryer and be like, all right, this is your tool to capture the soul.
Our prop master called him sick. Here's a thing.
And then, like, the souls were always weird. They do other things, or they had
odd abilities. This was a comedy.
It was a comedy. It was pretty funny. I liked it. It got canceled right on a cliffhanger too, and I was sad about it. But I really enjoyed the show. But one of the soul episodes, he had to catch this guy who was running a sperm bank, and he was replacing all the sperm with his. So it was just a bunch of his kids out in the world.
That's bad.
Do they all look like him? Is that like the joke?
Like, he like had all these pictures of him, like, get all these pictures throughout the offices and everything. It's like, these are all the kids that people have had by getting sperm from here. And it's just all his kids.
I don't think that's ethical. Like, just having a bunch of.
Well, who cares? It was escape soul from hell. Who cares about ethical?
I'm saying for the bank in particular. Oh, okay. Like
they didn't know it.
Institution that was run.
They didn't know it.
Oh, so it was just him.
It was just him being crafty.
Him in like an offshoot closet of a room with like some candles lit and like he got a creepy shrine to his illegitimate children.
Essentially, the big thing was the guy was obsessed with himself. He thought he was perfect. Mm. So there needed to be more of him.
Mm. I actually know someone that. Not certainly not that exact scenario, but had a very similar thing happen with their dad. That he was a pilot, and he had apparently fathered 12 to 15 kids, just hooking up with any woman that would sleep with him, having unprotected sex, just knowingly.
Just creating all these kids. There actually is a psychological condition when it comes to that.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up, but. That's life's full of messed up people, huh?
Yeah.
You know, ain't that how it is? So yeah, people should, for starters, use their Audible credit on Brandy Sandy's Rhythm of War.
The Stormlight's Archives.
The Stormlight Archive.
Dear God. Well,
yeah,
that book is so much better if you have read the other stuff. That's the thing. Because the little nuances about the expanded universe and everything really go big in that. And oh my God, it's just so good. Ah!
Yeah.
Fuck. It was great. It was such a good book.
Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, you can potentially check out Bridge Kingdom by Danielle Jensen. She blasts these things out in about 12 hours. So she's not
Can
interested.
Can you actually recommend this book?
Oh, totally. It's
stuffed with smut and everything.
Yeah. It's actually pretty fun. And there's so much hammy. I mean, you kind of have to appreciate the comedy of it. It's well enough written. She's not a bad writer or anything.
Yeah.
You know, and if someone wants like a good book, like get Cersei. Cersei's a really good book. But like, no, if you just want kind of a fun, again, kind of smutty little romp, it's a good book. It's not bad.
I just don't want to see what it does to my Audible recommendations.
Gotta throw off the algorithm. It's going to be so confused.
It's probably already recommending a lot of like, women lit and a lot of like, you know, those kind of books about like, the woman whose only flaw is that she doesn't think she's beautiful. You know, like,
which are fine with women literature. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah,
like, yeah, these are
women main character or books written by women. Yeah, I think these are genuinely enjoyable. Don't expect fucking Tolkien here or anything. But, you know, yeah.
And again, cleanser after Rhythm of the War, because that by the end of that book, it got like so emotionally draining as well. Because that's
And there's no magic in this either. Ugh. It's not like this is a where she's going to spend 100 pages explaining how like some kind of magic system works. That doesn't have to happen. It's very much about spy stuff and intrigue. So I'm guessing what makes up 1,200 pages is world building and a lot of kind of crafting, like who these communities of people are. And
yeah, but it doesn't mix in with everything. So it's not like you're going to get this beat up chapter like, dear God, I don't care about them. Like
Yeah.
It's so good.
Oh, another book, a Nebula Award winner, Frederick Pohl's Gateway. If you want to have something that's genuinely like good sci-fi that people won't like roll their eyes if you tell them you read it, Frederick Pohl is a great, great science fiction writer from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And his book, Gateway, is really fucking good. Hmm. Any other books you want to read? I don't know.
There's another series I'm rereading right now because he just came out with two more books. Kind of slipped it in on us. It's interesting. It's up to 9 books now, but they're short books, so it's not that overly taxing. You feel good because you just burn through them. It's called the Cradle series. It's very... I don't really want to go into depth with it and everything, but it's an easy fantasy read that's not too complex. It's pretty fun. You can burn through these books quickly. So that's another good little series to get into. I don't know where it's at right now because I'm rereading it to refresh myself before I read the next two books. But he came out with those pretty quick. But yeah, that's another good series. The Cradle series by Will Wright.
Will White.
Will White, yeah.
W-I-G-H-T.
And he also came out with another good trilogy, which was the Traveler series, which was good. I liked that one too. Again, this is a nice fantasy books because it's not a overly complex thing. There's nothing particularly heavy about the book. It's just a fun, light, easy read. And I liked the series. It was good. I read it when I was in Belgium during downtime. I was just burning through these books.
While you had COVID?
Yeah, while I had COVID in Belgium. Just burning through these books.
if there's a place to get COVID, it's a place of free healthcare.
Yeah. Oh, that was great. That inhaler helped so much. Oh, my God.
I got a book. I read a book.
What would you read?
You did. You read a comic.
Hey. Don't be elitist.
Yeah, buddy.
It had X-Men in it.
No way.
Unless you read
an X-Men novel. Actually, I did when I was younger.
Yeah?
Like, the X-Men novels were really big in the 90s.
And... Were they novelizations of the animated series?
Probably not. They're probably just staring.
I don't know the narrative of those well enough.
No, I remember them being just kind of like... long-form stories about various groups of X-Men doing X-Men-like things. Mm. You know, I remember there was one where there was like a cross-dimensional thing occurred where... I want to say, who's the one that Professor X hooked up with? There was like an alien race.
Lalandra.
Yeah.
The Shi'ar.
The Shi'ar. I feel like there was one of the stories involved the Shi'ar that I remember reading as a kid.
Wait, he hooked up with her?
Yes. Followed the child.
This is penis work?
Well, yeah, he's just, he's not able to move his legs. He can still...
Yeah.
He can still feel them.
But typically...
I mean, he has one of the most...
We only need to have this discussion.
One of the most powerful lines ever, like, that he could make her orgasm have an orgasm.
Yeah.
Like, without even touching her.
He doesn't have to do
anymore. Boom, have it.
Right. Yes.
It's like that scene of Bruce Almighty. He's on the other side of the door. Pleasure, pleasure, pleasure.
Yeah, that's not really like it, I'm surprised they got away with that sort of scene.
I don't know why.
What was that? There's probably a PG-13 movie. That's kind of like the Jim Carrey sort of Ben Stiller, Rob Schneider sort of form of comedy where it's some guy just being a goober rated PG-13. There, that's every single one of their movies,
pretty much.
But yeah, this X-Men book is called Ten of Swords.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was glancing at
this.
Oh,
10 S-words.
Yes. 10 S-words, yeah.
I mean, I'll put it somewhere.
So it's a sort of like a closure to the particular era of X-Men. This guy who's now helming the X-Books, Jonathan Hickman. The beginning of it, sort of like, of his run on the books, and kind of this soft reboot.
Is that like a Weiss and Hickman? Weiss and Hickman are too famous.
I don't know.
Like writers.
Not that I'm aware, but maybe.
I have a brief question before we get into the 10X swords. How many times are the main X-Men part of some kind of weird prophecy or something? Because I feel like we're doing this a lot. Like what is it, the 11?
12.
The 12?
You're one off.
There's the 12, and now, was Wolverine one of the 12?
No.
Okay. Was Storm one of the 12?
Yes.
And now she's also one of the 10 swords.
10 of swords, yeah. Well, that wasn't so much a prophecy. It was, this is getting into like some of like the cosmic mystical stuff of Marvel. But
it's,
there's
always them over and over again. When they're ever like, I wonder. it's always like, I wonder who's this destined person. They're like, well, just go over to Xavier's place. You'll find five of them. Like, you'll
find the most important people on the planet are just over there.
They're in that one building playing ping pong down in the basement. I don't...
They should have a ping pong table. But basically, so... this whole run of X-Men started with Dawn of Sword, or Dawn of X, which is sort of like the introduction to what Jonathan Hickman was writing. It started back in, I think it was late 2019, and Ten of Swords is sort of like the closure of the beginning part, and now it's moving into Reign of X, which is going to be the next phase. It's kind of breaking it up like the MCU breaks up phases of movies. But they're moving into the next phase, and Ten of Swords is sort of the closure of that. And it's not really so much like some sort of like prophetic thing that's happening. So in Marvel Comics, there's a multiverse. Yes?
Yes.
We all agree on this. It is something that they have had. The sort of hub connection of all of the multiverses is called Otherworld. And it is sort of moderated by this very powerful lady called Saturnine. And this is where Captain Britain fits into sort of a Marvel mythology, because Captain Britain is sort of the sort of representative of Otherworld and their own particular realities. So Brian Braddock, Captain Britain, is Earth 616, a sort of incarnation of the protector of Otherworld in Earth 616. And there are, for every reality, there is a Captain Britain. It's not always necessarily Brian Braddock. It's not always necessarily... in Britain or England. It's just that particular geographic location on any particular Earth in any particular reality. So this lady decides that there's going to be this tournament in order to settle a dispute between mutants that had been exiled in Otherworld and the mutants of Earth 616, the main Marvel universe. The sort of inciting incident is all of the mutants on Earth have been living on the island of Krakoa, which is a sentient island that they have now taken refuge on, because Jonathan Hickman has turned the X-Men into a separatist nation of mutants, which it doesn't exactly sit well, because X-Men have always been this sort of allegory, albeit an imperfect one, of a sort of civil rights movement. And a civil rights movement of any particular nation, the goal has never been to create their own separatist nation. And it's like, no, we're going to live here because this is our home and we should be treated equally, not we're all going to get the fuck out of here.
I'm going to cut you off there and say that this is bullshit.
Go on.
Because there's not 10, there's 19.
19 what?
Sword bearers.
There are 19 sword bearers. Okay, so there are supposed to be 10... Okay, so this whole story is kind of bullshit. Like, it's
interesting. Is it good? Is it fun?
Look at Wolverine. Looking like a goddamn tool.
He does look like a holy shit. Why does he have a sword?
Wolverine is a goddamn tool.
Because they're swords.
He's got blades in his hands.
Yeah, he's got knives for hands, and they give him a sword.
Well, this one's longer. I mean, would you prefer the Deadpool depiction from X-Men Origins with the big katana coming out of his fist?
Yes. I mean, Cyclops shoots a laser even out of his fucking face.
Cyclops,
and it's a laser sword.
Cyclops isn't Cyclops. That image is flawed then, because Cyclops isn't one of the 10.
No, they just drew everybody with the goddamn sword. They're like, yeah, don't even tell us who's in it. We'll do the splash.
Iceman's got a sword built into his arm.
Iceman also does not have a sword in the actual book.
Yeah, he mostly attacks with his penis.
So
who's this guy with the big... Is that Professor X with Cerebro on his face?
Yes.
Man. Is he one of the swords?
And I like that in the list here, they say that they even like say what every weapon everyone has.
Right. So Jonathan Hickman really, really likes building out this lore, which is one of the reasons that he started writing... In my conjecturing, is one of the reasons he started writing about Otherworld, the sort of hub that connects all realities together, because he really likes to do his own world building, and it gives him like this separate place that's not like actual on Earth, so it doesn't fuck anything up for any of the other books. So it lets him have his own sandbox to play in without really affecting too much of else is going on.
You're a little Jimmy. You can play in this sandbox because all the other kids think you're a dick.
Right. So when he writes, he wants everything to tie together very neatly, and things are going to build and lead to other events. And like everything that he writes is usually like major events are important and will lead to something else, which is good for long form storytelling, but it's bad for playing well with others. So by giving him this other space to work in, he doesn't have to worry about playing well with others. But basically, the island of Gokro that they're living on, millennia ago was split in two. Half of it was somehow sent to Otherworld. Not a big deal. Krakoa was once sent to space and came back. And what they're trying to reunite the two things. But when Krakoa was split, half went to Otherworld. There were other mutants there who have now been in Otherworld for millennia. And in order to their goal is they want to conquer Otherworld and therefore go and conquer Earth by getting to Earth through Otherworld. And Saturnine, the ruler of Otherworld, sets up this tournament. Like, okay, rather than having this big war, let's just have a tournament. You gather 10 swords from Earth, and then you mutants in Otherworld go gather 10 swords from here, and you'll just duke it out. So
how do two different people from both places get to wield the Muramasa blade?
They just ran out of fucking swords.
Do they swap swords when
it's got a long handle? One grabs the top part of it, and the one grabs the other, and they.
Now,
they do it together.
Wolverine, who is the X-Men who is wielding Muramasa, goes to hell with the guy from Arako, from Otherworld, who is also going to wield a Muramasa. And they get a guy named Muramasa to make two swords. They both call them Muramasa. They obtain them together. Then they go separate ways and say, okay, we're going to fight with these at some point. So this is like an interesting read, but it's not... good.
Who is Pogger Pog and he's wielding himself?
Pogger Pog. Okay, so Pogger Pog.
Does that mean he just whips his junk out and just.
Why does everything go back to dicks with you?
Well, you know, everybody has to have a hobby.
No, Pogger Pog is one of the antagonists. He's in Otherworld. He's one of the evil ones for this particular case. And he is a little goblin dude who is inside a big alligator suit. And the alligator suit is technically the sword.
I didn't know what to expect as an answer, but that works as well as any. Why is there one called the grass cutter?
I'm not sure which one that is. So here's the thing. Like, he builds out all this lore about each sword and who wields them and what each of the swords do. But then when it actually comes down time to actually have the tournament, it turns into this weird Harry Potter house tournament where they're not some of them do fight and some of them do fight to the death, but other times it's just here's a drinking contest, have an arm wrestling competition, Ilyana Rasputin magic has to arm wrestle Pogger Pog, who's this giant alligator suit dude, and of course she loses, but then a little while later she actually gets to fight him and fucking kicks his ass.
I see here the first one to die is Captain Britain. That must be directed exactly, that's a shot across the bow at Chris Claremont.
So well, death is a mislead there because you don't she doesn't at the time. Betsy Braddock, formerly known as Psylocke, is Captain Britain. She holds that title at the moment.
Oh, okay.
And she doesn't die in the way that other people are just have a sword run through them. She gets shattered into a million pieces, and then later on in the book, Saturnine is putting her back together. So we have not seen the last of her. And the thing with this particular story is that in this run of X-Men, in this reboot, they just have the power of resurrection. They can bring themselves back from the dead. They make basically grow themselves a new body and put a psychic copy of themselves in it. And they go, you died last week, now you're back. Everything's fine. It treats death with the same sort of irreverence and lack of gravity that comic books have been treating death with for decades now. So it doesn't really make that much of a difference. However, they found out through the death of a young X-Men known as Rockslide, that if you die in Otherworld, you can be resurrected, but you're going to end up different. So Rockslide, he's like the Thing from Fantastic Four, is the quickest comparison. But when they brought him back, he fell apart, and one of his powers is he's made of rocks. He can fall apart and put himself back together. But when he put himself back together, he was different and had a fucked up memories. So everyone was like, whoa, who the fuck is that guy? And he's like, hey, it's me, it's Rockslide. And everyone's just horrified because he doesn't look like himself anymore. So they figure out if you die in Otherworld, you can be resurrected, but you'll be resurrected differently. So that's kind of how they're building the stakes of having this tournament where people are going to die.
Meanwhile, I see one here, Captain Avalon versus War and the Holy Republic of Fae, their tournament, Killing Kittens.
Yes. So, and of
course, one of them is superior kitten killer.
Captain Avalon does not kill the kitten because he's the good guy. And it's a fucking point system. Like, you get points awarded.
Like, you're saying it's the house, the tournament.
Like the house tournament.
Yeah.
But to your point, there were like 19 participants. That's because one X-Man, one mutant from Kirko, from Earth, Gorgon, who I'm sure you don't recognize. Nobody fucking recognizes this guy.
I saw the picture.
He's got two wheels, two blades.
Yeah, he's the one holding the grass cutter. He's got the grass cutter and something else.
Mm-hmm. So, and he actually turns out to be the MVP because there's an antagonist, a mutant who's able just like to conjure out incarnations of soldiers that he has killed and then recruited. Like his power is he can resurrect people he has killed that will then in turn fight for him. Mm-hmm. And like the entire like setup is like this obvious ploy that Saturn has put it on in order to stack the odds against the X-Men. She gets Wolverine and Storm drunk, and then it's like, okay, now you have to go and participate in this contest while you're fucking
The resist temptation one. I thought that was on the list.
No, I don't think that was it. But basically they get put into like these compromise situations, and like all of the situations that the participating X-Men are put into are intentional so that the antagonists are building up all these points against them. And one of the
Iska the Unbeaten, is she ever beaten?
No.
Oh, good girl.
Right. She maintains that streak. Yeah. So, and that's like a weird power because she's sort of presented like her mutant power is that she
wins any game of chance.
She can't lose, which is, I don't know, like maybe some sort of like subconscious, like telekinetic, kind of like Domino, where Domino's mutant power is luck, but it's kind of speculated is she's telekinetic, but it's controlled by the subconscious part of her brain. So she can't like willingly move things into her favor, but the subconscious part of her brain is interpreting her surroundings and able to manipulate things just enough to where it looks like she's just extremely lucky.
So it's like the mechanics of Final Destination, except the opposite.
Mm, yeah.
It's like things are always fortunately happening around her.
Right. But Gorgon becomes the MVP because he has to fight the guy who's able just to conjure the incarnations of people he's defeated in battle. And the X-Men are down, like, by 13 points at that point. They're in a huge hole. Doesn't look like they're going to win at all.
Yeah.
And the guy just keeps on conjuring people. And Gorgon just, like... Gorgon's mutant power is murder, which is... What? Fuck off.
Okay.
His mutant power is he's good at murdering people, which... You probably don't remember Gorgon. I just called him Gordon. That's how much I remember this guy. Gorgon is an antagonist.
Can he survive a 100-foot fall?
No.
Because I feel like Nightcrawler would have an advantage there, where he could just grab him and teleport up in the air.
Nightcrawler's an ass kicker. If he were in the tournament, it would have been over really quickly.
Yeah. I feel like if there's one person I mean, I would lose to every one of them, I'm sure. The one that would shame me the most would be Nightcrawler.
Oh, yeah, because he'd have fun doing it.
Oh, right.
It'd be a joke to him.
Yeah, he would do that thing where he would make sure you achieve terminal velocity by catching you before you hit and then just going back and up over and over again.
Yep.
So ability is the power to transform anyone that made direct eye contact with him into stone.
Gorgon?
Yep.
Interesting. I don't remember
telepathy,
that ability.
Empathy, genius level intact. Are those resurrection powers.
Are you looking at Gorgon
the human? Oh, that's the Nick Fury stuff. He just makes that shit up.
I clicked on Gorgon on this list. Gorgon wielding God Killer and Grass Cutter.
Okay.
And then post-resurrection power, superhuman strength, speed, stamina, durability, healing factor, agility, reflexes.
And Storm has diplomatic immunity.
But the point is, like, he ends up catching up the X-Men in points. By
just murderizing.
But by killing him, and then the guy he's going up is able to conjure up 100. He didn't do it all at once, but he's able to conjure up to 100 of incarnations of people he's defeated in battle. And Gorgon is able to take out 13 of them, catches them up in points, but then is killed himself. So when they resurrect Gorgon, he's going to come back a little bit differently. But that pretty much leads to the main event where Apocalypse has to fight his estranged wife. And this entire story is, set up as this sort of...
It's like Kramer versus Kramer. They're arguing over the custody of a child.
the whole story is very Apocalypse heavy. Everything since Jonathan Hickman has taken over is setting up something to where Apocalypse becomes like this character, and I guess he's trying to set him up to be like some sort of sympathetic character, which is hard to do with Apocalypse because he's had fucking 30 years of being just this maniacal dickhead who's just trying to murder everybody and create this dystopian future. So the fact that it's like you're supposed to like feel bad for Apocalypse because now he has to murder his wife, like, who the fuck cares? He didn't have any problem murdering anyone else's wife or giving someone's infant son a fucking mechanical virus who's got to send him to the future. Fuck Apocalypse. But of course in the end he gets what he wants. He doesn't have to murder his wife, and everyone gets to everyone eventually just gets what they want.
So you're going to bury the lead on what goes down with this resist temptation thing? Did we get some people fucking?
I don't remember that part. Mm. So I don't know what temptation they had to resist, because there was a wedding. So
it was Issica the Unbeaten and War versus Gorgon, Magic, and Wolverine.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was one of the last fights, or like one of the fifth to last fight. I don't know, doesn't really matter. There seems like there's some funny ones, like Torture Endurance.
Mm.
That's great.
This is weird. Yeah. Yeah, it was a weird story, because it was set up to be like this fighting tournament where it's going to be like a blood sport, and then it turns out to, you know, resist temptation. There was a wedding, and the person from each side, Doug Ramsey Cipher, who is fluent in every language, has to marry this woman from the opposite side, and they both get a point because they agreed to go through with the marriage. So now he's married.
It also said Gorgon's wielding Warlock.
No, that's Doug who's wielding Warlock.
Okay.
Warlock.
Just a guy named Doug.
I thought it said Cypher wielding Warlock.
Yeah, Cypher is Doug. Oh. Doug Ramsey.
All right.
But Warlock is an alien. Kind of like the Phalanx. Similar to the Phalanx.
But he's not wielding an alien?
Right. So Warlock is also a metamorph. He can change himself. He's changed himself to a mech suit for Doug before. He can change himself into a sword, but he never actually has to use his sword, and it's a good thing too, because Doug is useless and would have died quickly.
Okay, so he doesn't actually use Warlock for anything.
Right. So the entire, like, a point of hunting down all these swords ends up being for practically no reason, because maybe half the characters use their swords.
It's weird that there's another character called Warlock too, because Adam Warlock is a thing in that.
Yeah, in the cosmic universe.
In the cosmic universe, yeah, there's Adam Warlock, which is a big fucking deal, that guy.
Mm. But Warlock is also, I don't know who came first, but Warlock is an alien who hangs out with the New Mutants for a while.
I don't know, you just gotta be happy to have Apocalypse on your team,
I guess.
You know? Right.
Oh, but in the end, so
it's like Pog or Pog. I got Apocalypse over here. What you got?
I got Goblin inside an alligator. Which, yeah, huh? This made me immediately think of one of Legion's split personalities of being just a Velociraptor. Mm. Like, what the fuck? Where does this shit come from? I'm 1,000% on board for this Goblin in an alligator. Oh, that's my new favorite character. That's the Goblin in. Oh.
We need a Pog or Pog ongoing series.
I just Goblin and Alligator. I am, oh my god.
I don't
god.
Know. You haven't seen Red Root yet.
What's Red Root?
She got some tree titties.
Oh, tree titties?
Mm-hmm.
Show me a picture of the Goblin Alligator.
The Goblin. So it was basically in the end, like, an all out war breaks out, and the.
Oh, I'm fucking on board.
The conclusion is that the two halves of the island get to be reunited. Apocalypse has to stay in Otherworld, where he has to live with his wife. How sad for him. A couple of people died. And yeah, like there were. There's a big crossover, so there's a bunch of different books, X titles coming together for this one. There are some that are very self-serious that. The writing is very heavy, and there are others that treat this with the seriousness it deserves, so it's very silly, and those are the fun parts. The character of Mr. Sinister is turning into a standout character, because he's just kind of like this catty bitch who has his own agenda, because of course he does. He's going to betray them all at some point. He's not even a mutant. And he I just like this disdain for everything else that's happening around him. And a weird obsession with capes. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's it. I'm looking forward to them closing the chapter on a lot of this other world stuff and maybe getting back to some more X-Men on Earth type of adventures.
It has more goblin and alligator. I can't say that more. It's fun to say, even. I can't say it enough. Just more of that. I'm on board.
Anything else we need to address before we close it out here?
Well, I think it's getting a little late. We can probably cut it there.
I got some stuff, but not next mini show, so no big deal.
Okay.
Yeah, let me address it here.
So next up is going to be the retro show.
Okay.
It's going to be a good one. We got a bunch of games that we'll address, as well as a good lineup of movies.
Some movies, some of that.
I need to watch some of these. I got to watch
Shanghai Noon. That's one you got to
watch. That one. And then Mission Impossible 2 is coming out. It came out.
Mission Impossible 2.
So I got to watch that one again. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah. The 1 and 3 highest grossing movies came out this month.
Gladiator.
Gladiator, of course.
I never really liked Gladiator.
Dinosaur.
You know, I watched Gladiator.
Dinosaur.
Yeah.
Third highest grossing movie of the year.
Really? It was so boring.
We're going to talk about it anyways.
I watched Gladiator again, and we'll address it more in depth when we get to the show. But, yeah.
It just seems like a lot of just, like, get to the point. Like,
I'm in the same boat, honestly. We'll get to talk about
how it's... Ridley Scott's stronger movies.
We'll get to talk about how it's historically inaccurate. Because he chose to tell something that's based on actual history, and then he's like, let's just fuck it all up anyways. So we'll talk about that.
But yeah, so that'll be a good one, and then we'll close it all out with the official show at the end of the month. That's it. That's the end. Till next time.
So long.
Later, Gator. Thank you.